Welcome to the Fit 40 podcast, where we take all the confusing, conflicting fitness and nutrition information and break it down so that you can live your healthiest, strongest, most energized life. I'm your host, Brian Fitzsimmons. Let's get it started. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back for another awesome episode. We have another awesome guest this week. We have Tara De Leon with us. Okay, she is a personal trainer and lifestyle coach. She's the author of Hot Mess to Hot Mom, and she's the co-host of Wellness Rebranded Podcast. So I am so excited to pick your brain. I got a lot of really good questions coming up, so I hope you guys are excited. Tara, welcome.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. So I like starting it off every single guest. I love to know origin stories because when it comes to fitness, when it comes to nutrition, like everybody kind of comes from a different place a little bit. And we all have the same goal at the end of the day to feel better, look better, and operate better. So I'm just curious, like what got you into the whole health and fitness space for yourself and then like as a profession?
So I've had like a hell of a transformation throughout my life. I used to be very like diet culture focused, and now I'm very anti-diet culture, and it is all about like being healthy and being able to, you know, get on up and down on the floor with my kids and, you know, things like that. Whereas in the olden days, my origin story was like I wanted to look great naked. So my history starts back when I was a kid. I was super ugly. My teeth were horrible. My parents cut my hair in a like inch long pixie cut that, you know, I just don't have the right face shape for that. And I was super fat and out of shape, and I got bullied a lot as a kid. And, you know, it was just like very unpleasant looking childhood in terms of like physical health. But I got into college. Well, I did Taekwondo like in high school. And then in college, I lost a bunch of weight, you know, just by nature of growing up. It's not like I did anything special. But grew out my hair, got braces, you know, got my pearly whites here. And, you know, once I got to college, this was like not pre-internet. I don't want to say I'm like a super dinosaur, but like the internet wasn't good back then. So it was really hard for me to look up like what classes I needed to be taking. So I ended up in a class that was for coaching majors. And I, at the time, was an international business major. And my professor for sports fitness techniques was like, oh, yeah, totally. Stay in the class. It's awesome. Now I know, like, actually, probably I shouldn't have been in that class. Like, it had nothing to do with anything I needed to take. But he was so passionate about everything that he was teaching that it, like, piqued my interest. He taught us how to clean. He taught us how to snatch, deadlift, like, all this cool stuff. And at one point in the class, I had kind of, like, a light bulb moment where I was like, oh, my God, this is the secret to, like, never being fat again. And I was like, I should make this my major. And at the time, I was waiting tables at Outback Steakhouse and basically surviving off of their loaves of bread as my main staple in my diet. And one of my coworkers was a personal trainer. He's like, you got to get certified, dude. We should do this thing. You know, you'd be a great trainer. And I was just like, okay. And here we are 20 years later, I'm still doing the thing, you know. But it's definitely been an evolution in how I started versus what I do now.
It's interesting you say that you worked at the Outback Steakhouse because honestly, I swear the best personal trainers all used to be servers at some point in their lives.
Yeah. It's like we've learned to talk to everyone and deal with things we shouldn't have to deal with.
Hey, I mean, if you can master those people skills in a job as crappy as serving tables, personal training is a piece of cake. You just learn your stuff and you're like, all right, I could chat it up for an hour.
Yes, 100%.
Awesome. Awesome. So when it came to that point where you got your certs, you started up and everything like that, what was that transition like from basically being that new trainer to where you're at now? Like, what were some things that you did that you're like, yeah, I probably shouldn't have done that? Or like, what have you changed your mind on over the years?
Oh man, so many things. So of course, like in the early days, I thought skinny meant healthy. You know, that was like the marker. Like I thought I could look at people and go healthy, healthy, not healthy, you know, and now we know like, of course, that's not the way it is. We can't see into people's body and see what's going on there. You know, kind of a big turning point for me, something that I needed to have this journey, but I wish I wouldn't have had to have the journey was I was a personal trainer I'd been working in a gym for like 4 or 5 years already. So I was like fairly experienced, outlasted like 90% of other trainers, right? Yep. And I decided I wanted to go be a collegiate strength coach. So I quit my job and I started working for like less than minimum wage even at a university, which was amazing. And I loved the job, but the pay was terrible. The hours were terrible. You know, I would be there at 6 o'clock at night. I'd be there at 6 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock at night, and all these random hours in between, you know, getting paid like $10 an hour. And of course, there was like politics involved with it. Like, I had a lot of athletic directors over the years tell me like, oh, well, we can't have a female strength coach for men's sports. Like, the guys won't listen. And I was like, that's not at all accurate, sir. The ones who won't listen are the athletic directors. The athletes have no problem at all with me being a female. So I did that for like 10 years, which I loved. But eventually at one point I was like, hey, I'm here like all the time and I want to have a family. Like, I'm ready to have kids. I can't afford to buy a house on this salary. So like, what am I really doing? So it was at that point that my husband and I found a house where we live now. And there's a gym like less than a mile away. And so I quit my job, closed on this house, and started at the gym all in the same day. It was like a crazy weekend. But it just so happened that the boss at the gym down the street was a guy that I used to work with at like my very first job way back when. And he was like, hell yeah, we'll hire you. Come on, when can you start? Like, it was the easiest job interview ever. And I was definitely nervous about it, right? Because I don't necessarily look like the stereotypical personal trainer. You know, like, I live in a larger body and, you know, I'm like a 40-year-old woman. I'm not like an 18-year-old dude bro, even though I am a dude bro on the inside. So I was like a little bit nervous, like, oh God, what if people won't train with me? Cause I don't look like jacked and juicy. And it was like completely unfounded and I'm busy and happy at the gym and I love it. So while I wish I wouldn't have wasted so much time as a collegiate strength coach, because it didn't help me get closer to my goals at all. I couldn't have been where I am now without having experiences like that.
And I'm so glad that you said that based on like that mentality, because as personal trainers, we're not immune to it, where it's like, if we're not shredded, how are we going to get clients? Because that's what everybody thinks, right? Yeah. But then you find out that's only what the shitty clients think, because they think that your results correlate to theirs. The good clients are like, hey, totally. I like what you're saying. I think it's going to help me. And that's all that matters.
You know, I actually had a conversation with one of my trainers at the gym yesterday, who is a bodybuilder, and he totally is jacked and juicy. He's like won competitions and stuff. And he's having a really hard time getting clients because people don't want to train with him. They don't want to look like
him. It's intimidating.
And I'm like, do you know how freaking hard it is to look like you? Like,
yep.
And I said, dude, like, I don't look like the way my clients want to look either. Yep. Right? But it is possible that we both have knowledge that will help our clients regardless of how our own bodies appear. And it was like, you know, he's 18 years old, right? So this was just like fresh knowledge to him. Like, what? People might not want to look like me.
I'm a god.
But it's true. Yes. I'm an Adonis. How could you not want this? Yep.
But you know, I say that
weird 40-year-old mom.
I say
don't
that jokingly because I was totally that guy. But but I mean, it's interesting that I really think that that mentality, that like inner story we tell ourselves, is more so like people will always find a reason to not take action. And it's either, oh, you're too jacked, I don't want to look like that. Or, oh, you don't look the part, I don't want to work with you. It's like, if people are going to find a reason, they're going to find a reason. It has nothing to do with us.
And absolutely.
Back to what you were saying about the strength and conditioning days. I know, at least in my experience, back in high school, we actually had a female trainer come in for our football team. And we said first day, we're like, this woman. And then day one, 10 minutes in, we're like, holy shit.
Right.
Because after that first 10 minutes, like when you command the room and you know what you're doing, people fall in line. Like nobody really, that eye test does not matter at all. It's like, okay, okay, yes, ma'am.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Some of my favorite athletes have been like my, you know, football teams or lacrosse teams or whatever that are full of young dude bros. And that's just like, you know, you're one of the team. They embrace you. It's really like administration that has the hang up, I think. And I would be so bold as to say it's mostly because they're old timers and they didn't grow up in a time where women did anything cool. So they're like figuring it out still.
And I know I was looking through your post before we hopped on here, and you guys had a really good segment on your podcast about like the history of women and like sports and fitness. Like, I'm interested to talk a little bit about that, because like you just said, like maybe what, 50, 60 years ago, it's like, oh, you just belong in the kitchen. Like, don't bother me. But now it's been a totally whole 180 where it's like, okay, we're going to lift some heavy shit and we're going to be badass.
Totally. Yeah. So interestingly, that episode is our least popular episode ever.
That's the guilty listen. That's the guilty reason. Everybody's like, I hear you, but I'm not going to like this.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was super interesting. That one was like my idea. I was like, we should talk about this. And apparently nobody cares. But essentially, like, you know, if you look at the history of fitness, it goes back to like, you know, Greek and Roman times. But the history of women's fitness, particularly in this country, really is like, you know, in the 60s and 70s, we were wearing like vibrating belts to help like burn our fat, you know, quote unquote. And then, of course, the 80s came, and like fitness in the 80s was so fun and colorful, and like that Jane Fonda hair and leg warmers, the hair, like it was like fun music, but all of it was in the pursuit of like shrinking yourself smaller, smaller, smaller. Nobody ever cared about being strong. Like, I don't think women even thought that. As long as they were strong enough to like do their daily life activities, which is the point, right? That was enough. But back then, women were still kind of going like, oh, I need a strong man to do these things for me. Now we're kind of all like independent and like, hey, I got to be strong enough to do my own stuff. You know, so we've definitely had like this transformation. And as much as if you know me, you know that I generally like don't love CrossFit. You know, I actually have to give CrossFit some credit, because I think that taking the fitness industry by storm and seeing these like ripped people, women especially, doing like cleans and snatches, and even though the form is insane on some stuff, like it kind of opened women's eyes to go like, man, that is cool to be strong. And now I see in the gym all the time, we don't have any CrossFit classes or anything like that at the gym. I see women all the time doing like cleans and snatches and deadlifts and cool stuff, because they were exposed to it, you know, in the early 2000s due to CrossFit.
I think, which is cool. Overall, CrossFit did have a net positive because it got so many people in the gym. Kind of like when you look at like Jane Fonda, Richard Simmons, like they got a lot of people into the gym and got people excited for like, hey, if you move your body, even if it's not like technically perfect, you're going to piss off a lot of the gym bros that think you need optimal angles and shit like that. Like, you're going to feel incredible just by moving.
Yeah. I was just telling a client earlier, like, motion is lotion, rest is rust.
Ooh, I like that second
and
part.
And it's like, man, if you just move a little, like, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of rest, right? Like, I think my most recent Instagram post is like, rest isn't laziness, you know, like we need it. But if you're not moving your body regularly, like you're going to stiffen up. You're not going to feel as good as you normally do. So motion is lotion.
I'm so glad you said that, because honestly, that's something lately I've been implementing a lot more in my own programming, is like the off day stuff, because off day should not mean doing nothing. And as fitness professionals, we're like, yeah, we'll get some steps in and we'll make sure we walk. And we know that. But then the clients are like, so I get to sit around all day? Mm-hmm. Awesome. But yeah. What are some of your favorites?
There's a guy at the gym who does like a bunch of mobility stuff, and he has these like giant orange sticks you've probably seen on Instagram or whatever. And it is incredible. Like 5 minutes with that thing, you feel like Gumby. You just feel like a completely different person. Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
I've heard people rave.
But that's total good recovery day
about
thing.
That stuff. And I know if anybody wants to scroll back far enough, I have a podcast episode with Al Painter, and he is very good with those, like whatever the orange sticks are. I'm not sure what the actual name is because it's a brand. And he raved about them. So there's definitely something to be said for all these different modalities, especially on rest days.
I think those are called mobility sticks. Like, I think that's the brand.
Way to hit it on the head.
Because that's what he uses too.
They got that trademark in so fast. yeah. But honestly, like,
laughing their way to the bank for
anything
sure.
Anything mobility stick related, they're like, check please. But that's the profitable side of fitness. We don't know about that side. Not yet. But that is a really good one too. And also I know there's stuff like mace work. There's body weight mobility, yoga, stuff like that, that people are love, but that's like the majority of their workout. That's like what most people think is, oh, that's my exercise. What would you say to somebody who does the yoga, does the mobility, and like, I am feeling amazing, but they could be doing better?
So, I mean, generally, if you're feeling pretty good, like, don't mess with greatness, right? But we just know, like, as you age, especially, like, you gotta have strength training in there. You need to be building up your muscle, because we know that as you age, we have age-related muscle loss. We know that as you age, you have age-related bone loss. And lifting weights like twice a week for 20 minutes is going to protect against that. So I'm not telling you have to be in the gym and like be a total dude bro every single day, but like just a little bit of weightlifting twice a week is going to go so far into making sure that you age 100%. Gracefully. Like, being able to get out of a chair. So my husband and I are both like larger size people, and we've had our couch, which was a hand-me-down from my mom. So the couch is like 20 years old. And one of our cushions, the one we always sit in, is like completely flat. And like, it's hard to get out of that seat. And it's like, oh my God, I'm 40. So if like my mom comes over to sit there, like I can't have her sit in that seat. There's no way she'll get out of it. But if you were lifting for the past 30 years and you had a little bit of leg strength and a little bit of core stability and a little bit of balance, you know, which you could get in twice a week for half an hour, maybe getting out of that seat wouldn't be any problem. Yeah. Right. It's not like I want everybody to be bodybuilders. I want them to be able to live their life and get off the couch.
Well, that's
easily.
That's what a lot of people don't realize when it comes to fitness. Like, you can work on life stuff. Like, if anything, that's the real bang for your buck. It's not, oh, I get to look at myself in the mirror and flex. It's like, no, you can do things so much easier. Carrying the groceries doesn't feel like you're about to drop them every 5 seconds. Walking up the stairs doesn't feel like you're about to die of a heart attack.
So here in Maryland, they just implemented a plastic bag ban.
That happened
at the grocery stores.
It sucks. Which...
like, it's so annoying, right? But like, on the upside, I'm like, wow, like I get to use my like empower women bag in public, which I've never done that before. Like, okay, that's cute. But like, I can fit all my groceries in like two giant bags. But can I carry the two giant bags is like definitely a struggle to get from like the car to the front door without like dropping your keys and your purse. You know, it's changed a lot of things. So it's actually made me do a hell of a lot more farmer's walks at the gym.
And as you said that, it reminded me, my girlfriend actually just started Orange Theory. And as much as we talk about group classes and not being like optimal, it does include weights. And she's starting to be like, hey, I'm going to take the bags. Like, I'm going to like walk with all this stuff. And I'm like, you go, girl.
Right. No, don't do that. I wanted to carry the bags.
But
dang it.
There's something to be said for when you exercise, you see yourself in a different light. Like, you view yourself as a fit person.
Yes. Yes. I always think, like, if you're having a bad day, go into the gym and put some heavy weight on the bar and lift that shit, because you cannot have a bad day knowing that you're like an absolute badass for deadlifting, however 100%. Much it was. Doesn't even have to be very much, you know, but you just like drop that bar and walk out of the gym like with a little strut and swagger, knowing that like you freaking got this, you know. It's just absolutely.
And anybody
listening
that's like, ooh, I don't know about the barbell, that's totally fine. Like, if you want to load up a machine, honestly, totally. I do that when I'm like super stressed. Load up a machine, because you don't have to think about it. You're just like, I have to put effort in and get all of this rage out. Done.
Yes. Yep.
Yep.
Same
as long as you're exerting yourself, because I know when we were talking about like the strength and conditioning stuff and all of that, like if you show up ready to put in effort, you belong. Now,
absolutely.
I don't want to get too far away from it, because I do want to circle back and talk about your book. So I'm assuming some of these concepts show up in the book. Would that be fair to say? Yeah.
Fair to say. Yep. Chapter one is about recovering from childbirth and getting back into the gym. Oh, that's a fun topic.
Let's talk about that, because I know pretty much moms listen to this. So what would you say were some things that you did right and things that you probably would have done different pre-pregnancy and then post?
So I was under the impression that because I had been working out for like decades, and then I got pregnant, that I would just be able to have my baby and then get right back to the gym. Like, what changed? Nothing changed. It's been like 2 weeks. It's fine. No, it was not at all fine. Like, my pelvic floor was definitely not as strong as my coffee. That's for sure. So for me, I was under the assumption that it would, even though I've trained pregnant women before, like, I truly didn't get it until I was postpartum and like, wow, like, that is a struggle to even stand up, you know? So I'll give you an example. I worked out my entire pregnancy. My son was born on a Saturday. So I worked out Thursday, came home, took a shower, and then Friday morning we got up and went to the hospital for my induction, right? Because I'm old and fat. So they were like, oh my God, we have to induce you. So he was induced the day before his due date, and then 30 long hours later arrived. So I worked out Thursday. He came Saturday. He went to the NICU for a couple of days. So it was COVID also. So the doors to the hospital near where the nursery and stuff were closed. So we had to walk down this long hallway. Okay, it's not that long, right? Annapolis is not a huge town, but like maybe 150-yard long hallway from the car to like where the elevators were. And we got like halfway down the hallway on, let's say, like Monday. And I told my husband, I was like, I need to rest for a minute. And he was like, what? You need to rest? And I was like, my legs are so weak. Like, I don't know what's happening right now. And he was just like, well, here's a bench, sit down. So we sat there for like 5 minutes. And I was like, God, I'm the biggest loser on earth. Like, how did I just do a workout Thursday and now it's Monday and I like can't even move anymore? And like thinking back on it, right? It's like, well, you were in labor for 30 hours and I wasn't allowed to eat during that time. My labor story is a whole can of worms that I won't even get into with you unless you want to hear it. But essentially, I was misdiagnosed with preeclampsia, so I wasn't allowed to eat during labor or for 24 hours after. So I was just like super, super unfueled. And then I was eating a little bit, right? But like, you don't gorge yourself necessarily after labor. So I had like no energy in there to even walk down the freaking hallway, right? So my expectations were wildly different than what I experienced. So getting home and being like, all right, I'm going to move a little bit again. Like, it was, I just had to start some from so much further back than I expected. Yeah. So to answer your question, chapter one is all about like rebuilding strength, you know, gentle exercises for postpartum recovery. You know, maybe we're not jumping right back into like our gym routine. In fact, in the chapter, I'm like, hey, you just grew and birthed an entire human being. Like, take 8 weeks, take 12 weeks. You still don't feel good? Take a little bit longer. You deserve it. This isn't something that you have to recover from instantly.
Who trains predominantly moms, I still can't wrap my head around the fact that like you literally just did the hardest thing any human will ever do in their life. And you're like, yeah, I want to get rid of any evidence of that ASAP. I'm like, wear that shit like a badge of honor. Right. I mean, there's guys that get a paper cut and they're like, check out this scar. Like, come on.
The accuracy. Yes. And I think society like has something to do with that, right? Because during pregnancy, our little bellies are so cute and we're growing life. And then afterwards, it's like, whoa, it's floppy and gross, you know? And it's like, oh, okay, well, shit, it used to be cute. Now it's gross. I have to get rid of it, you know? And I think like I would love all moms to be like, yes, my body's awesome. I freaking grew this amazing miracle. And it's okay that it doesn't look like it used to. I'm still like a badass, epic mom. But in society, we're treated differently if we don't conform to beauty standards. It is wild. right? So I think this is an issue that is larger than Absolutely. Just us.
And I think it does come down to a lot of the guys educating themselves. And I know, like, I crack my girlfriend up because I know you're taking this cert too, but the menopause certification, and I'm like reading away, yep. sharing what I'm learning. And she's like, it is so weird seeing a guy that interested in menopause. And I'm like, hey, guys should learn this stuff.
Yeah, for real. For real. I feel like as women, so much of what we experience, like menstruation, for example, like, dude, sometimes that is brutal. And we just like get up and go to work like we're not almost mm-hmm. dying over here. And we don't talk about it at work because it like freaks dudes out. And also it's like a little bit inappropriate sometimes. And, you know, it's just something that we just silently deal with and carry on with our day. But we're still expected to perform at like 100%, you know? And I'm not saying like we shouldn't have to go to work or whatever. I mean, I would love that, but I get it, right? This is the world we
live
in.
It's an interesting situation.
But because we just deal with things like that, like we just continue to deal with the things.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Now, when it comes to like further on in the book, what should people expect? Like they go out and buy it and they're like, what's really like the end story here, I guess, or like the big, big message that we want to get across?
Oh, that's such a great question. So here's basically what I did with this book. I had this dream that I could write this book for new moms to kind of give yourself permission to feel what you're feeling and then give you a toolbox on how to get back to feeling like yourself. So the inspiration for this book was my son turned a year old and I was having a birthday party for him and I was taking a shower frantically, like hoping to be dressed by the time people started arriving. And I looked down and I realized, oh my God, I can't even remember the last time I shaved my legs. Like, has it been days? Has it been weeks? No, girl, it's been like months since you've shaved your freaking legs and your child is a year old. He's like walking and feeding himself. Like, you need to get your shit back together, right? And so at that moment, I thought, I need like a checklist. Like, what would it take for me to feel like I had my life back together? You know, and I thought about it like, well, I'd be working out more regularly. I'd be making sure I got enough sleep. I'd be fueling myself properly. You know, I would have like my will and estate plans updated. You know, I would have, you know, some guidance on like how to do the things I wanted to do, like what used to make me feel like me. Right now, granted, I was a little bit of a special scenario because I had my child during COVID. So like nothing was normal. But I still feel like once women have a baby, we kind of feel like, man, the old me is gone, which is true, right? We're never going to go back to who we were before we had a child. But for me, I felt very lost. I went from being Tara, you know, wife, daughter, personal trainer, you know, bestie, all these different hats that I wear, all that stuff got thrown by the wayside and it was just mother, milk maker, you know, caregiver. Like my whole personality kind of changed. So this book is like the toolkit that I wish I had back then. So when I shopped it to the publisher, she was like, okay, I freaking love this idea, but are you an expert in all those things? Like, are you a dietitian and are you a sleep, you know, guru and all this shit? And I was like, well, no. So she was like, this book is better as an anthology. So she's like, obviously write your chapter. I wrote a chapter on like body image and I wrote one on returning to exercise. And then I have like an intro chapter and an outro chapter, closing chapter. So I did write like a majority of it, but I also pulled in other experts, to talk about like, how to find a village for yourself, right? Like in this country, we don't really do the village anymore. We only have a village if you pay for a village, which let's be honest, not all of us are like dripping
in
diamonds to afford a village.
Wrong if quitting your job makes more financial sense than sending a kid to daycare.
Yeah, like totally. So we've got a chapter about that. I have a chapter about, you know, motherhood is hard. Eating doesn't have to be, right? How to like meal plan, a positive spin on parenting, like just kind of like touching all those aspects that I found challenging. to give you like, here's a little story. And then every chapter has a tool. So even if you're too busy as a new mom to read the entire book, which by the way, it's an easy read and it's pretty fun if I do say so myself. It has tools in it that are only like a page long. So like my tool for postpartum recovery exercise is a workout plan. So you just take that and you can use it. You know, there's like meal advice. I don't want to say meal plans, but there's like meal guidance in the meal chapter. You know, there's how to do an estate plan. Like here's some links to click on and, you know, or to go to so you can file your own estate plan so that you have that taken care of. Like it's really like a toolbox of what every new mom probably needs and doesn't realize that she needs yet.
That sounds super, super helpful because I feel like the best books that were written were literally people that are like, I wish I had this at some point in my life. And then it speaks such volumes and is so impactful for all the people that got it at the right time.
Yeah, my hope is that this becomes like a very popular baby shower gift because it makes more sense to read it before you're in the thick of it, even though like you can, right? Like it's such short chapters and I did that on purpose so that like you can read it during a feeding or something. But if you kind of know going into it, like, oh, I'm going to keep my eye out for like, there's a chapter on like postpartum depression, anxiety. You know, we don't talk about that kind of stuff enough. So like little things to look for there. So you don't have to wait till you're in the thick of it to realize, oh shit, I've got this issue. I should have done whatever.
And I know,
right?
being in the strength and conditioning space, like one of the big things that I try to talk about as much as possible to try and normalize it, because it seems like such a big thing that not enough people are taking advantage of, is pelvic floor physical therapy postpartum. Can we go into that a little bit?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Brian, let me tell you this. I went to my doctor 6 weeks postpartum and very typically they were like, okay, cool. You're open for business. Enjoy. And I was like, wait, but what? Like, but it doesn't feel right down there. And they were like, yeah, no, you're good. It's healing good. You can have sex now. Enjoy. And I was like, great. So I said, well, listen though, like when I sneeze, I'm peeing my pants. And they were like, yes, you're a mother. That's going to happen. Don't even worry about it. And I said, okay, you know, right? So my annual exam was somewhere in the realm of like 6 months later. So I went back and I said, okay, so listen, I'm still peeing my pants every time I cough or sneeze. And like, it's about to be flu season, dude. So this is not acceptable to me. And I kid you not, she was like, well, you could go get pelvic floor physical therapy, but it probably doesn't work. So I wouldn't even waste your time. And I was like, well, what are my other choices? And she was like, just wear a pad or something. And I'm like, I am 30 whatever years old. I am not going to wear a pad for the rest of my life starting at 36. And she was like, okay, well, just change your undies a lot. Like, that was the advice I was given. I was like, this is bullshit, dude. We deserve better than just like, sorry, you're peeing your pants all the time. Like, unacceptable. So lucky for me, I have a really great network that I've kind of built over the years here locally. And I know a bunch of pelvic floor physical therapists. So I sent in like, you know, the inquiry form to my friend. And to this day, she's like, it's the best inquiry form I've ever read. She thought it was hysterical the way I described, like, my husband pees with like this big strong stream of pee. And then I'm over here like drip, 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 drip. And I'm like, God. And I like get like ragey about it. Like this guy just peeing over here and me
These
sitting here
real
for 5 minutes leaking, you know? Right. This is what we're fighting about. Right. And she's laughing so hard. She's like, okay, you're a good candidate for pelvic floor PT. So I went in and she assessed me and she's like, okay, so you've got a little bit of like separation in your abs, which of course is so common with most pregnant women. And she fixed that in about four minutes. She did some like crazy massage. Like that's
that,
how easy
for anybody
it
that
is
doesn't
sometimes.
Know, it's called diastasis recti. And that stuff can be a big, big problem. But the fact that it was, she could fix that so fast, it's mind blowing.
Yeah. Yes. And my OB didn't even assess it. She was just kind of like, yeah, like, welcome to motherhood. Your abs suck now. You know, by the way, guys, just for the record, I got a new OB. I see someone else now. But, you know, she fixed that in about 4 minutes. And it was just like weird, like pressing on the belly. It wasn't even anything invasive. And then she referred me to like one of her coworkers who did like pelvic floor physical therapy, which is incredibly invasive, at least in the situation I was in. Think of it as like foam rolling the inside of your vagina, but somebody else is doing the foam rolling.
That's
got
to be an interesting image on our way to work right now. Like, okay, got that in my head.
So I will tell you, it's like totally awkward, right? Because you're laying there with your cooch all on display and they're like chatting about the weather and, you know, and like for me, because I'm interested in it, they're like, oh, do you feel this muscle right here? This is the levator, whatever, kiss, you know, and she's like, that's really super tight. So she was like, I'm going to massage that. And you can feel her inside like doing like rubbing on it. And you're like, what the heck? And it's not painful, but it also wasn't pleasant.
It almost sounds like, you know, a deep tissue massage, like, but inside. Like, it's like, okay, I know, yeah, totally. I know this is good for me.
And for all the husbands that are listening to this, it's not the same.
That's how I justify it in my head. That like, that feeling of like, this is not comfortable, but I know it's good for me.
Yes, that's exactly how it was. So I did a few sessions of that, probably like 8 or 9 sessions of things like that. And of course they had me do different, like, you know, clench and then relax and then clench and hold it for 10 seconds and then relax and then bear down, right? Like there was a whole bunch of different patterns that they had me do. For me personally, my problem was that all my muscles were just too tight. So when I would go to sneeze, typically you sneeze and your pelvic floor contracts to like make sure no pee gets out. For me, mine was already contracted all the time. So it was just kind of like, oops, well, sorry. So for me, what they worked on me with was learning to relax my pelvic floor. And this probably harkens back to like the olden days where we were all told like Kegels all the time. Like, by the way, that is not the secret, guys. Not Kegels all the time. You need to also learn to relax your pelvic floor. But like for real, 8 or 9 sessions and I'm like 95% better. And yet our healthcare system was just like, it's probably not going to work. Like, come on, man. That should be standard practice. You get pregnant, regardless of if it results in a baby or not, and you should be going to pelvic floor PT.
Yep.
At least for a little checkup.
If we learned anything, it's that no matter what the job, there is good and there is bad. And it helps to shop around and see, hey, does this person care? Number one, if they're like brushing you off and saying, it's par for the course, like, and not actually taking you seriously. It's a good tell. Like, maybe it's good to find somebody else.
Yep.
So
absolutely.
What would you say would like, with your new healthcare team, like some things that stand out that you're like, oh, these are giant green flags for me. Like when I went in, like, what are some of those? Like if you were to tell somebody who's nowhere remotely close to us, like you're Maryland, I'm Jersey, but somebody in Cali, what would you tell them to like look for that like really stood out to you?
Okay. So like the green flags would be actually looking me in the eye. You know, I've had doctors that like, don't even look at me when I walk in and I'm like, hey, hello. I'm here. So making eye contact for me is huge, probably because we work in a people business.
But it's one
right?
of those human qualities too.
I also
because
think it's
like you actually know somebody actually gives a shit when right. they have the decency to look at you.
Yeah. You know, it's funny actually doing this on Zoom or whatever this is. Like I'm looking at you and not at the camera. So it probably looks like I'm not looking at you at all. But it feels awkward to me to like not have that eye contact because this is a conversation, you know? So looking for someone who can actually like have a conversation with you, super important. For me, I love it when my doctors don't like rush me out. Like ask me how I'm doing, you know, postpartum, they were like, so you feel any like rage towards your baby or like you bonding good with him? And I was just like, no, yeah, I'm good. Like, but that was like the extent of the questions postpartum issues.
Yeah.
We have
and
to
that
be better.
Does speak a little bit to thoroughness because it's like, if they can't even be bothered to ask like more than like the standard questions, how are they looking at your blood work? How are they looking at your test results and things like that? Are they just skimming it or are they actually taking a look?
Yeah. And you know what? And like doing blood work is a big thing. you know, like, let's check and see what's going. Let's pop the hood and see what's happening under there. You know, so many doctors are just kind of like, you good?
We've been talking about so many different areas of the body. When you said pop the hood, I'm like, okay, I don't know where this is going.
Hey, you know what? If it's pelvic floor or mom related stuff, pop that hood.
That'll
too.
Have to Let's be the name of this episode. Ready to pop the hood.
Yeah, that'll that's be my the legacy.
That'll be your follow up.
Pop the hood.
Book.
Check
Let's
the
pop
oil.
The hood.
We'll see. My husband wants me to write one on like hot dad, good. Hot mess to hot dad. And no, I'm like, I don't think dads will read this, but
guys like to think that we know everything about everything. Unless there's somebody super jacked and alpha telling us a way to be a better man. But back to the
totally.
Yes. Yes.
Funk Roberts.
I love Funk. He's the man. But back to your green flag. So yeah, we have looking in the eye. Like actually asking questions. What else was there? I feel like I cut you off there. Is there anything else?
Let me think for a sec. Looking me in the eye, actually asking questions, actually listening to my responses, and just giving like a minute. I feel like doctor's appointments are sometimes so rushed that it's like, hey, you got to have your list written down when you get in there so you can fire it off before they leave. I feel like sitting there and just like, so anything else, like what's going good in your life right now? Ask me about my job, ask me about my kid, you know, take an interest in me as the person rather than me as the patient. Like I feel like that's a huge green flag. You know, I'm finding in like when I do consults with postpartum women, nobody's listening to them, nobody's asking the questions, and nobody's listening to the answers. So when I find a provider that says, hey, tell me your birth story, you know, how is it being a mom? How is postpartum? Oh, your kid's 3 and a half. How is that? You know, by the way, it's great. It was 1 and 2 that I struggled with. 3 has been a dream.
Well, that's good
to
hear.
1 and 2.
And I'm glad you're bringing all this up because I actually had a client that had an appointment with a doctor, an OB that specializes in menopause. And it was very similar to exactly what you're saying because they went to their previous doctors and they're like, listen, this is just a part of life. Like, suck it up, deal with the symptoms, and like, you'll eventually get over it. And then she goes to this person and they actually give them some hope and say, hey, I listened to everything you're telling me. And honestly, you're not alone. There are things that you can do and X, Y, and Z are what would be best. And it's like, how much better does that feel on the patient side of like, hey, I have options.
Yes. I'll tell you another funny story. I went to my doctor right after I had my son. And for some reason, my libido was like gone. And of course, it's like not shocking, right? Like you just had a baby. Things are a little iffy down there. Like, of course your libido's gone. Nobody wants to have sex when you're feeling like that, right? But I was like, hey, so like, what can I do to get this back? Because like, I am married and his libido is not gone. Like, I want to be a good wife also. So like, what can I do here? And she legit was like, well, there's probably some like herbs or something you can buy on the internet. And I was like, what? I'm like, this is your best case scenario is like, go search the internet for like, you know, Rhino 9000 pills for women. Like, get out of here.
Well, as a guy, I can tell you,
and then
those
she
don't
was like,
work.
Oh,
just saying.
Your libido?
Those gas station Rhino 9000, they don't work. Just, I know a friend who knows a friend that took one and bad news. Yeah.
So she was like, listen, your libido will come back when your son goes to college. And I was like, in my mind, I'm like, that's 18 years from now, dude. And then she like checked her notes and she was like, oh, you'll be in menopause by then. Never mind. It's gone. And I'm like, what? So I do feel like we need to like hold our healthcare providers accountable. Like, dude, don't give me an answer like that. Yeah, tell me you don't know or
like
refer me to someone
else. Literally
went
to Debbie Downer,
you know?
MD.
This is after she fat shames me for like existing in a larger body, you know, but that's normal. So it wasn't shocking.
But no, you're right. We got to hold literally every profession to a higher standard because there are people that are just punching the clock, doing whatever they need to do until they get out and they don't care. And then people slip through the cracks and then this is what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm totally. So happy we touched on all this stuff because this is honestly what I know everybody needs to hear. Like they need to know about these topics and what their options are and things like that. So I don't want to like lose any of that. And I think it's time for the final question of the day. So are you ready? All right. So ready? We have a tradition here of leaving a question for the next guest without knowing who the hell they are. So are you ready for the question? All right. So this one comes from Sean Rivers. If you guys haven't listened, that was the last week's podcast. Definitely worth a listen. In the health space, what is the hill you're willing to die on?
Oh, man. So many hills. I'm willing to die on quite a few hills, to be honest. Is there a mountain range nearby?
This is Tara's
I feel like
Rocky
that could be a good
range.
Fit for me. I would prefer mountains that are a little bit warmer. Like the Ko'olau Mountains in Hawaii. Okay, so hills I'm willing to die on in the health and fitness space. One is that weightlifting is essential. I don't care who you are or what your issues are. You need some form of resistance training in your life. Another one is that weight doesn't equal health, and that we need to be looking at the activities that a person is doing. Are they moving? Are they sleeping? Are they eating a wide variety of food? Okay, if they're hitting all those things, then the fact that they exist in a larger body is probably not the biggest problem in the world, right? And then last one is that sleep is so underrated and none of us are getting enough of it and we need more, especially women. I actually read a thing recently that was like, most of our sleep studies have been done on men, and that's where we get the 7 to 8 hour a night rule. But women actually need like 9 to 10 because of the mental load that we carry. We need more recovery from that. So
I can almost hear everybody with like toddlers and younger right now, like 9 to 10.
Trust me, I have a toddler. I know. And unfortunately for me, my husband is an early waker upper. So he will wake up an hour before I'm ready to be up. And he just can't help but like reach over and give me some cuddles, which I love, but also it wakes me up.
It's like, love you, but get out and get away from me. Hey,
yes.
Anybody that's been in a relationship has had
absolutely
that moment where it's like, I love you, but get the hell away. But this has been such a great conversation. And honestly, this is like,
So what's the hill you're willing to die on?
Okay. So yeah, mine would be, I'd have to copy you on the strength training. Like everybody needs some sort of resistance training. And then my other hill to die on would be that when it comes to nutrition, there's no one way that works. There's a different way for everybody. There's different protocols for different situations. And there's no such thing as the one diet that's perfect for everybody.
Yeah. You know, funny story. I used to always say like, I hate the keto diet. It's the worst diet ever. Nobody should ever do it. And then my dog started having seizures and the vet put her on a keto diet and it's worked perfectly for eight years. Knock on wood, you know. But I'm like, oh, see,
exactly.
There's
exactly.
Something
as long
for
as
everyone.
It's applied appropriately, because there are people that take certain approaches and go haywire with them, like keto, for example, or like the alkaline diet and stuff like that, saying that it cures cancer. We don't go that far, but there is a time and place for pretty much every diet. Yeah. So that's my
100%
die on my hill, except I'm going to have to pick a hill that's right near where yours are, because I'm a big fan of the warm weather too.
Yes.
There we go. I'll set up a nice
spot for you.
So thank you for coming on. I really do appreciate it. This is probably the most honest conversation I've probably had on this entire podcast around these topics. So I know that people got a ton of value from it.
Well, I love it.
If anybody right now is listening and they're like, I know somebody who's about to give birth or trying to get pregnant or maybe even past that point, they're postpartum, and you're like, they need this information, go ahead and send it to them and be like, just listen and you'll be happy you did. And if you want to find Tara and hear more about all the awesome stuff she puts out, get on her list to get her book, where can they find you?
So I'm most active on Instagram. I realize my Instagram handle is terrible. It's Tara_day_Leon_fitness.
So luckily, it'll be in the show notes. You guys don't have to type all that in. And honestly, I thought you were telling me it was terrible, like at @TARABLE.
No, I usually tell people my name's Tara, like Tara piece of paper. And I heard my husband say to someone, "Oh yeah, my wife Tara," and they said Sarah, and he goes, "Oh, no, Tara, like terrorist." And I was like, "What?" So yeah, no, it's terrible.
Gotcha. All right, Instagram. Tara. Where else?
But also, you know, I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I have my podcast, which is called Wellness Rebranded. You can find that anywhere you like to listen to podcasts. And of course, the book's coming out. Absolutely. So look
and
for that on Amazon.
As soon as you start posting about it, I'm sure as hell going to be resharing it. So you guys will catch it on my media too. As for all that other stuff, all the links are going to be down below in the show notes, so you don't have to go searching. So Tara, thank you again for coming on. Really appreciate it. And everybody who is listening, I know that this is super valuable. So thank you for tuning in the entire time. But until next time, go kick some ass. I'll see you later.